Welcome to the New Wolsey Theatre Podcast. I am Zach.
And I am Zanna.
And I'm Jack. The New Wolsey Theatre is an award-winning theatre in Ipswich.
We're a vibrant cultural hub offering all kinds of performances, community engagement, and artist development.
We're going to be chatting all about different areas of the theatre and the arts.
And thank you for joining us on this episode.
We're back here with another episode of the New Wolsey Theatre Podcast. And today we have Martha Loader here. Hello.
Hello.
Can we have a little introduction, first of all, just about who you are and who you are now to the theatre as well?
I thought you were going to introduce me, Jack, as we've known each other for a long time, but that's fine. I can do that myself. Yeah, I'm Martha. I'm an associate artist at the New Wolsey. I'm a writer, sometimes producer. A little while ago, I was an actor. Still quite like to be one day. It's a pipe dream.
Wouldn't we all?
Well, that's a funny story, isn't it, Jack?
Well, slightly. Yeah, we do have a bit of history with acting together, don't we?
Yeah,
yeah. Met at the Mercury Theatre in Colchester.
We did.
We're allowed to name them on the podcast, don't worry.
Other theatres do exist.
Yeah, we did a show 2019. It was
wasn't it? 2018, 2019, because it was the centenary of the first woman to get the vote.
Indeed. And we did that twice, wasn't it? That was
we did.
At the University of Suffolk and then over at the...
And then at 101 years, we
yes,
did it again.
Yeah. But, I mean, good to remember every year.
Absolutely.
Associate artist, then, for the New Wolsey. How did you hear about that?
Well, I'd had conversations with Doug. I think Doug remembers it that I pestered him, and I think I remember it as I just invited him to something. But that's probably what I did. He came to see a read-through that we did of Bindweed quite a few years ago at the Mercury, and then we started having chats after that. And then while I was while I'd run away to New Zealand last year, the year before, he suggested maybe that I became one of the associates here.
Great.
What exactly does an associate artist mean, though? Like,
what an excellent question.
I'm not sure myself, and I work here.
Why do you keep turning up?
Every Thursday,
you just seem to appear. Well, I think it's different for every associate artist. So my associateship is being very kindly funded by the Peggy Ramsey Foundation, which gives me a year's attachment to a theatre, this particular theatre. And means that I write a play by the end of the year, but also that I sort of embed myself in with you guys. So it's an opportunity for writers really to be part of the kind of local ecology of the theatre, as well as just someone that turns up and writes something every so often. It's more embedded, I think. That's the principle of it.
And what does that mean to you? So we talked about what it literally means, but what does it mean for you as an artist? What does that allow you to do?
Well, it's great. I mean, I grew up in Ipswich, so the New Wolsey has always been part of my childhood, and this is a huge thing for me to be so part of the theatre. It just, I mean, it gives me money, which is lovely, and most people don't want to pay creative, so that's very nice. But also just being part of the team is really lovely, and that's sort of what I said to Doug when we first talked about this. I really was quite scared about working on my own.
Yeah.
And actually, it's really nice to feel like you're part of a team, because I've always worked in creative teams in some way or another. So I didn't want to be a lonely writer in the shed.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm. My shed is awful.
Not fit for a writer.
Fit for a writer. There are no windows and a lot of plant life coming in.
And no curtains.
No curtains. Oh, it's a hard life. So yeah, it's really nice to be somewhere with curtains and nice views. And every time I do Zooms from here, everyone's like, where are you?
Yeah, we have a nice few little backdrop spaces like this one, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Pictures of previous shows, yeah.
So I feel like the real deal now.
And I was going to say quickly about time must be a really key thing. Like, does this allow you to have the time that you need to write something and focus time as well?
I don't have time, Jack. Yeah, no, of course. It's really useful. And I think also, as someone that's always worked in an office, it's nice to have the feeling of deadlines and that, you know, you're accountable to someone. And I think as a writer, you don't always get that. So it's bought me loads of time to actually do the things I need to do. But so it's ideal, really.
Yeah.
Tell us about the play you're currently working on, Bindweed.
Yeah. So Bindweed, I first started writing with the Mercury Theatre, other theatres do exist. in probably 2021 on their playwright scheme. Mm-hmm. And then we did a reading of that in June 22. And then it went on to win the Judges Award at the Bruntwood Prize, which we'll, I'm sure, talk about.
We will, absolutely, yeah.
But it's a play about domestic abuse perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And partly because of, I think, like a lot of people during lockdown, I watched the numbers of cases rising considerably during the pandemic, but it's always been very high. I think currently one every three days a woman is killed by her partner. Wow. In this country, which Jeez. Is just staggering, really. And yeah. So it felt like we are doing something wrong. And I wanted to look at what people are doing to try and break the cycle of abuse, and came across these perpetrator programs, which I'd never heard of before, and then was really fascinated about how they work and the ways that we as a society are trying to tackle this endemic problem, really. Yeah. So I worked with Iceni, who's a charity in Ipswich, who run a perpetrator group, and Suffolk Police as well, both of which were just really helpful in the sort of development of it.
Yeah.
And came to the reading and we've spoken to since. So yeah, it's nice to have their sort of support as well.
And the play the artwork is really great for it, isn't it? It shows that very sort of, you know, the old school, like school seats, almost like the red seats, very close proximity in a dark room. Is that kind of the setting of the play, really?
But yes, the artwork is really beautiful. Mm. And we had a lot of backwards and forwards about that, and what that would look like, and how we could kind of represent these groups without it necessarily fixating on a particular person.
Yeah, or sure.
Demographic of people, which is also really important because it is it's a sort of nationwide issue. Well, it's a global mm-hmm. issue, but it's also, you can't pinpoint any one group of society.
No.
Everyone mm-hmm. is prone. Everyone is at risk of abuse across mm-hmm. society. So yeah, I think the artwork was really important to get right as well. And I think they've done a really fabulous job of that.
So tell us more about the Bruntwood Prize. Like when you won, what does it mean to you? What does it, in terms of your personally, and how it affects your career trajectory, things like that?
Yeah, so about a week before I decided to move to New Zealand, I got a call from the Bruntwood Prize, who I had sort of forgotten that I'd even put this play into,
right. mm-hmm.
saying, you're on the shortlist, and can you make this award ceremony in a few weeks' time? And I said, no, I'm afraid I can't. Which was semi-ironic because it was it's an international prize now, as of, I think, the year before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were flying in from the States, from sure. Australia. Oh, goodness. And I was like, see ya. So I say I've sort of forgot that I'd applied for this, but I think because you don't really, as a writer, you don't often expect to in any way
sure.
come close to these things.
Yeah.
So I hadn't even, I don't think I'd even looked. Everyone applies under a pseudonym, and I think the long list was published at that point under everyone's pseudonym. I'm not even sure I could remember what my pseudonym was. So I had no idea.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a shock, to be honest. And so at 3 o'clock in the morning in Auckland, while I was living in a conspiracy theorist's house.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I got up to watch the award ceremony on Zoom.
Yeah.
And then even more spectacularly won the judges award, which I was even more surprised about than I had been about the shortlist, because, you know, it's just nice to be in any way shortlisted for anything. So that was pretty wonderful, and it's a really important new writing prize in this country, but also, as we say, internationally. And has been incredible. And I think everyone said, oh, this will change your life, and you'd think, oh, I don't know what that means. But I think it has in a really nice way. It's, I think, even just for me, it's sort of legitimized what I do, and I feel like I can sort of call myself a writer now.
I think you absolutely can. I was going to ask about, you know, you say you'd forgotten you'd applied for it, and, you know, obviously you talk about writers, you know, you doubt your work, and you sort of, you have to get to a certain point when you trust that you're doing the right thing. But obviously it won the prize. Did you have no inkling that you'd written a really good piece of writing here? You know, was there mm-hmm. there must have been some belief behind it that I've got a good play here.
I suppose it's hard. I mean, competitions are difficult anyway, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's, you're sort of up against often thousands of people who are writing really mm-hmm. good plays. And there are lots of really, really good plays out there. Sometimes I think you write a play that really speaks to a moment in time. Yeah. And I think perhaps this play did that. Of course, it's a wonderful play as well.
I can tell you hate giving yourself compliments here.
But yeah, I don't think anyone expects.
No.
Because it's such a strange thing in and of itself to be in these sorts of competitions, mm-hmm. I think,
yeah.
that actually maybe the healthiest way is to apply and then forget.
Sure,
And more often than not, I would get emails sort of 9 months later from things that I'd submitted work to saying, oh, thanks, but no. And you were like, I'd forgotten I'd even put in for this. Oh, right. Now I remember. Great.
Yeah.
I don't think I had any expectation.
And by the sounds of it, maybe no acceptance speech planned out.
I'd scribbled some notes just because I thought, oh my God, I don't want to be that person at the Oscars.
Oh, goodness.
That's like,
yeah.
And forgets everything. I couldn't tell you what I said.
No.
Also because no one sort of met up. There were two of us on Zoom and we were messaging each other on Twitter. We'd never met.
Right.
Saying, can you see anything? What's happening? And no one came to sort of say what was going on. So we sat there with our mics off and our videos off, and then they said, oh, we think we're going to beam to Martha in New Zealand.
Oh no.
And so I turned on my camera and my microphone and said, hello, can you hear me? And I realized, because I was watching it on Zoom, but also they were live streaming it on the website, which was easier to watch, I could see myself
projected up on the
stage of the Royal Exchange Theatre in Manchester.
Oh no.
Going, hello?
Just turn your laptop away, yeah. You're sort of thinking, how do I look right now? Like, this is horrible.
Awful.
Yeah.
I think if I ever go to an award ceremony again, I'd probably quite like to be there in person next
year. Sure. Yeah. Maybe not be in New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. Although I do have previous with bad awards.
Right.
Because I once, this just, I'm now just showing off, but.
No,
check out my trophy collection, everything I've won.
Let me tell you about another award that I've won.
Very prestigious.
Yeah, absolutely. I once got awarded something at Ink Festival by Richard Curtis, who is my absolute favourite. Grew up on Richard Curtis films and once at school wrote an essay about why he was my hero. Everyone else wrote about their parents and I wrote about Richard Curtis. So this was a big moment. I do also love my parents. but I wasn't there because I'd... been finishing up another play in another room at the festival and thought I'd missed his, he was giving a talk. I didn't realize that they were doing all these awards things afterwards.
Oh my God.
So we were outside having a pint. And apparently they called my name and I just wasn't there.
Oh no.
Because I was drinking in the bar.
Oh goodness.
And then they came out and found me and pushed me on stage. And then I just sort of ran at this man.
How many pints in were you at this point?
I probably too many.
Did you still have a pint in your hand when you went to
it? So good.
Here, just hold that quickly while I take my award here. Yeah.
It wasn't far off that. So maybe award ceremonies are just not for me, actually.
Love that. I mean, going back to the prize though, what has it done? You say it's changed your life, but what specifically has it done since? So you're getting a lot more emails, calls from different people saying, write this for us, write this for us. What has it done for you?
I think incrementally, maybe that's happened a bit from this. I think it legitimizes you,
yeah.
I think, as a writer. And so I'm doing an attachment with the Almeida Theatre mm-hmm. in London at the moment, which is part of their Genesis Foundation big plays scheme about getting writers that have mostly written for studio and mid-scale theatres to sort of work on a main stage.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, came through them reading that as part of the Bruntwood. They basically, I think the Bruntwood just sends the play to everyone and anyone.
Sure. Okay.
So suddenly you end up having conversations with people that I was never going to get close to before. And then I'm working on a commission at the moment with Menagerie Theatre Company in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the Channel 4 screenwriting course at the moment. Ooh. And the BBC Voices scheme as well. So I think, again, incrementally, it's really how it got me an agent, and that's sort of opened doors as well.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a millionaire yet.
Always time.
Always time. Exactly. But yeah, it's definitely, there's definitely been a gear change in my career since then.
Yeah. That's great.
When you say it, winning the prize legitimized you as a writer, did that change your mentality as well? And like, what was it like beforehand? Was there any kind of feeling of imposter syndrome to some extent?
Not at all. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, completely. I think because I'd always said, oh, I don't want to be a full-time writer. Mm. I enjoy it and I want to keep on enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And actually now I am a full-time writer.
Yeah.
I do really enjoy it. I think there's a different kind of pressure with it in some ways that I think it is quite scary. It's quite an exposing thing to do. I think I was really worried about being lonely, so I've taken on so much stuff that I now feel overwhelmed by people. But I think that's also really nice because I always wanted this to be a collaborative thing. I'd write novels if I liked my own company that much. So, it has been a shift in terms of my mentality, but I do think imposter syndrome comes along with that, partly because I'm doing lots of things I've never done before as well. Mm. And writing for telly is really different, so much harder than I expected.
Yeah.
And even just thinking about scaling up the work as well, and the project that we're talking about with the Woolsey would be keeping the main stage in mind. And what does that mean? And with the Almeida stage as well, what does it mean to write that kind of play as opposed to a sort of more studio sized scale that I've been working to before.
Just to come back to Bindweed, why should people come and see it? It's you know, when you read the copy online, it's got heavy themes in there, and it looks like something that some people might think actually that might be too much for me. But what can you tell us to maybe change that perspective as well?
I think really it's a play about humanity. I know most plays are about humanity, but I think this is really about us as a society taking responsibility for a problem that is so ingrained in our society that I think it's really important that we confront it, but also look at these are humans and there are reasons that people do the things they do. And part of that is about good education and sort of, encouraging people to look at themselves a bit in a way that I don't think we're doing at the moment. And I suppose this is an opportunity to look at the programs that exist and think about the ways in which we are teaching, particularly our men, how to treat our women. Mm-hmm. But also, it's quite funny. Which seems like a really terrible thing to say, but I think we, particularly in this country, are really programmed to find humor in really dark places. And people are funny. People are wonderful characters, and this as a slice of life should be sort of reflective of the society that we're in, which is both very dark and very brutal, but also we find a lot of humor and solace in relationships and interactions with people.
And just to quickly come back to teaching men about how we should be treating people, there might be some men that would look at this and think it's a play not for them because they don't feel they resonate, they feel like they're a good person. But what could you sort of say to that, to on the aspect of learning and always trying to learn and be better, basically? What would you say?
Yeah, I think exactly that. It's not about pointing the finger. I think it's about saying in general that we all need to step up because something isn't working at the moment. If every 3 days a woman's being murdered by her partner in this country and that's not taking in the rest of the world, something is not working.
Yeah.
And as much as we can put our fingers in our ears and say, well, it's not me, I'm the good person, I would never do that, we're all kind of contributing to a society that is enabling that. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
With everything you have going on right now, what's your aim for the future? What are your aspirations beyond this point?
I think just to keep going, really. I really feel like I'm still at the start very much. And I really love learning. And I sort of fear that these schemes or these things might end and then it's just me on my own. And I really like the support of other people's expertise and knowledge. And I think that's what having an attachment to somewhere like here is really helped with. It's just feeling that you're part of something rather than you're on your own. Mm. And so I'd love to just carry on collaborating with people. I'm a proud Ipswichian.
As we all are.
As we all are. And I think that we're in one of the best regions for new writing in the country. We're an incredibly fortunate collection of people here because we have an incredible new writing centre up in Norwich. There are 7 NPOs just in Ipswich itself. We are hugely creative as a region. And I think anytime I've thought about leaving the region, there are 1,000 reasons to come back.
Yeah, and,
Actually, I love to keep working with the people that have helped forge my career and sort of help the next generation of people like me to carry on that because I think we're in a difficult time creatively and financially, but I think there is so much support locally that I'd like to continue contributing to.
Speaking of the next generation, actually, what kind of advice would you give to any aspiring writers or like newly started writers out there?
I always say have rich parents, but it does help.
One could dream.
Yeah, exactly. We can all dream of those rich parents. No, I think really, whether my advice is useful or not, what I did was just apply for everything I did. And a friend of mine and I once read something about someone who aims for 100 rejections a year. And I thought that was a really nice way of reframing how you deal with rejection and kind of not to be precious about what you're going for and sort of see what sticks, really. I've found writers groups in theatres just gold dust because they give you a lovely network of peers and a great introduction to a theatre where it's really hard because mostly writers are very socially awkward beings and don't want to just go and introduce themselves to someone cold. And I hate that. I think that's really hard. But this again gives you a sort of attachment, a meaningful attachment to a theatre that I think is really hard to get otherwise. So yeah. That would be my advice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. We can't wait for Bindweed to come up here soon at the New Woolsey Theatre at the end of June, the Mercury as well as some other places to be yet to be announced, but coming soon. And just, can't wait to see what you come up with next as well.
Great. Yeah. Thanks so much, Zach and Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to be on the show.
Thanks for coming. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please tell your friends about us and give us a share on social media.
If you'd like to get involved with our podcast, please drop us a message on social media.
We have a full and exciting program of shows, activities and events throughout the year. For more information, visit our website at woolseytheatre.co.uk or call the box office on 01473 295 900.
The New Woolsey Theatre is a registered charity and relies on funding partners, investors and donations. We gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England, Suffolk County Council and Ipswich Borough Council.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes. It's produced and managed by our friends at podtalk.co.uk and is the copyright of the New Woolsey Theatre.